You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Come on around back, Arizona. It's 8 o'clock. It's our outdoor living hour. It's the second Saturday of the month. That means we're talking trees. If you've got a tree question, you can jump on the line at 1-888-767-4348. 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923, or you can email at info@rosieonthehouse.com. Generally, Jennifer is call screening, but we've got Jen Grura in filling in. Well, she's out. Well, Jennifer's out with another event. And then our certified arborist is off. Is it his 40th anniversary? That yes. John Eisenhower's off on his 40th wedding anniversary with Kim. So he sent in Steve Price, who's actually joined us on air with John in the past. Listeners, if you may remember, Steve's the guy that called on him for stopping outside of a school obsessing over a tree years ago. But hey, it got you into the arborist industry, and look where you are today.
It sure did. I love it.
Our tree of the month this month is the olive, Texas olive.
Texas olive is just a beautiful little landscape tree, and we're starting to see it planted a lot more now. This is a great tree when you're looking for something that is not going to get real large and you want some flowering, some color, kind of comparable a little bit to an oleander or even an orchid type tree. We call it the Texas olive because it has beautiful big white flowers on it, and then it gets these olive looking seeds that come off of it. And some people say they're edible, and some people say they're not. So that kind of each person, I know my dad was one of those guys that, boy, he would taste everything, and I just was waiting for him to have some kind of reaction and flop over one day, but he was pretty brave. So do some more research before you start eating it. But it gets about 15 feet tall here, kind of slow to moderate growth. It is a great plant for xeriscape, but it can also take a good amount of water if there's really good drainage. Another neat thing about this tree is that it blooms really heavy in the spring, of course, with the seeding. And oftentimes it may bloom off and on throughout the summer season, but it's definitely considered a double bloomer. And in the fall, after the summer heat and the monsoons, sometimes get another nice flashy display of color with it. Another good point about it is easier to maintain because it is slower growing. Any tree that's slower growing, it's much easier to manage, and you can perform structural pruning on it and really maximize sustainability with not having to be chasing it all the time.
It was interesting that you said it's not a big tree. You don't put Texas and little together.
Correct. That's right.
Now, with these olives, is it a messy tree? Is this one that, you know, a service that y'all provide is you go out and you spray for olives before they go into bloom so you don't have these big mess? Is this a messy tree like that?
You know, it is a little bit of a messy tree, but when I'm with clients, I tell them that, you know, if you want something pretty, if you want something that blooms a lot and is going to give you a lot of color, there's always a little bit of mess with that. So that's the opportunity, or that's the cost that you get with having something really nice and colorful, is a little bit of mess. There are treatments for more and more treatments for plants that are seeding or flowering that you don't want to do so much. And some people do treat that. We can look at that for you if it's an issue, if it's right near something. Each case is going to be individual. And, of course, you know, it's not super healthy for the plant if you can just put it in an area where you can enjoy it.
The Texas olive tree, our tree of the month. And water requirements, not a thirsty tree?
No, it's not. You know, any tree here, you know, once it gets established, or any tree here, I should say, it requires a lot of water through the summer. But after that, once it gets established, you know, occasional deep, deep waterings, you know, after the first couple years, you can definitely back off the water. And being slower growing, that helps with that as too. It's also cold hardy to about 25 degrees, so which is kind of our low, unless we get a bad year, then it may get a little damage. So you definitely want to back the water off in the winter. When it's real cold, doesn't require a lot. And one more thing, it does have a real short deciduous period in the middle of winter, maybe January, depending on the weather. So it may look a little peaked at that time, but it'll usually be fine.
Now, we generally go through our talking points on things to do for trees that month, but I'm actually going to skip it because what we had was water scheduling. We haven't had enough significant rains from the monsoons to adjust any type of water adjustment for our trees.
Right, right. We just came through that really hot spell, which would have been more critical, you know, May and early June, to really be, you know, tripling the water on almost everything. It's almost like you can't water enough during those months, the hot, dry months we have here, especially June. Everything is kind of a month late here right now as well, because we had probably the coolest May since I can remember. I've been here well over 30 years, and I don't remember a more beautiful May in my entire lifetime here. It was fantastic. So even on a note on that, even the turf is kind of been a month behind all year. So it's really struggling to catch up, the Bermuda grass, I should say, especially people who overseeded, that lasted a lot longer. And so anyways, you definitely want to start moderating the water after those really hot months. Keep an eye on it, though. If we get some good rains, that can make a big difference. What we're really seeing right now, because of all the precipitation we had last October through the fall and winter months, is we're seeing a lot of fungal root disease and root collar diseases, especially on properties where they didn't take that into account. A lot of times in arboriculture, everything we see, it compounds, and you don't see the damage for several months to a year, sometimes a couple years. And we're seeing that now, late summer. We're seeing a lot of trees just blow off real quick due to the fungal root rot diseases, either Phytophthora or Texas root rot or even others.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation. We're starting with Ralph in Phoenix on a sororal palm. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the broadcast.
I was calling about a sago palm, those short ones. Sago, it's spelled S-A-G-O.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that kind of?
Yes.
Okay, I saw on television in a nice North Phoenix neighborhood, two different women. Each had a small dog, and each of their dogs died, and they said it was from the dogs eating the fruit of a sago palm, which I didn't even know a sago palm had fruit, but it looked like from television the fruit was the size of a ping pong ball. It was a reddish purple, the one sago palm they had on the news, and this one woman said her dog died from it. I used to have a lawn service, and I have never seen a sago palm with a fruit on it.
Yeah, most palms do get some, flowers, seeds, or fruit, and it's deep. It's usually under the root crown, real deep under there, and you don't even Mediterranean fan palms. Are you familiar with them on a Mediterranean fan palm? Since you used to have a lawn service, they also get that on there. So yeah, a lot of times it's tucked up in there and you don't see it. I have not, in my experience, I have not heard of that particular event from the sago palms. But you know, there's anomalies all the time, and if an animal eats too much of anything in a plant, just like people, you can have a reaction to it. And it sounds like that's what happened here. They were sensitive to it, whatever that breed was, maybe, and maybe they ate enough of it. Some dogs will eat anything, you know. They find all kinds of stuff in dogs. They'll pull out shoes and whatever. So it's very possible. I would have to do a little research to find out, you know, how poisonous that really is. But there's so many plants that have some, you know, poisonous properties to them. But most of the time, it's never, ever a problem. Even oleanders. In my career, I had so many people, I don't want oleanders. It's going to kill my dogs and cat. And, you know, I had never in my whole career known anybody whose dog died from being poisoned by oleanders. But could it happen? Absolutely. If they ate enough of it, for sure. Usually, I mean, when I was trimming bushes, when I was a young man, I'd wipe my mouth or my sweat off, and you taste a little bit of those oleander oils, and boy, nasty. So, but again, dogs sometimes, they're a little crazy and they'll eat anything.
Yeah, Jay Harper's always said that, and people would call in, I don't want oleanders. I hear, and he's like, you know, Name one animal that you've ever heard of that has died. They're smart enough to stop, generally speaking, and don't eat things. And the amount of poison it would take to ingest from one of those plants to actually physically harm or even kill an animal is pretty extreme.
Yeah. I'm going to look that up, though. That's interesting. I hadn't heard that on Sagos. So,
well, we've got Myrna next on the line. Welcome to the broadcast. Hal, may we help you this morning?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about a sapote tree that it's 4 to 5 years old. I nearly killed it last summer by inadvertently overwatering it. So it finally dropped the leaves closest to the trunk, but I subsequently revived it. It's happy, but it's got a big, fluffy top. And I'm trying to figure out how harshly, come January, how harshly can I trim it back. I heard a guy talking about last week about some like shingly ash trees, how you could just cut it down to like just leave 3 inches of the trunk, and then you'd have a nice dwarf bushy type tree. So mine has three branches, and it's like the main trunk is maybe 3 feet tall, and then the three trunks coming up from that are maybe 5 feet tall, and then I've got the pom-pom happy top. So I was just wondering, can I cut it below the tri-fork, or should I do one fork at a time, leaving the other two forks in January?
Okay, I apologize. I didn't hear what kind of tree is it?
Sapote, a Mexican white sapote fruit tree.
Okay. You know what? It sounds like that was either, was it possibly damaged in the past? How long have you had it?
It's 4 to 5 years old, and it was a year ago that I nearly killed it over watering. And so, a lot of the leaves on the lower part of the tree finally fell off, but it's really happy now. It's so top heavy, I have to trim it. Come January, I need to trim it because it's so top heavy and it's, it's at risk
for
the storms.
Sure. Okay. So, yeah, here's what I would recommend. It's great you brought this topic up because we've really been on talking about sustainability in the landscape.
And you know what, Steve?
Yeah.
I'll have you do that after this. We can do a lot of things at Rosie on the House, but we can't stop the clock.
Got it.